Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
And greetings, citizens of Portland, Oregon. From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, readying a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Terry Harmon is accused in a murder plot. A man in John Lennon glasses robbed a bank in West Lynn, Oregon. And a driver fleeing police dies in a fiery crash after flinging pants at his pursuers.
Fantastic. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when the hour began. Without further ado, please pay heed to Legion of News.
I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, July 5th, 2010. A landscaper has told Multnomah County detectives that the stepmother of missing 7-year-old Kyron Horman offered him money to kill her husband. Terry Horman made the offer of a, quote, large sum of money to the landscaper 7 months ago, sources said. Multnomah County Sheriff spokeswoman Mary Lindstrand would not confirm that there is an ongoing murder-for-hire investigation. Sources said Terry Horman, the landscaper, and an undercover officer met, but she shut down the conversation. Kyron's father, Kane Horman, filed for divorce and a restraining order against Terry Horman last week. The landscaper's allegation is likely what caused Kane Horman to move out of the Northwest Portland home he shared with Terry Harmon on June 26.
Really? Say the odds makers in a fantastic leap of faith? Let me understand this. So, my wife, she was going to have me killed, allegedly. I'm not saying that we know that with any specificity or certainty to be the case. But was this alleged by the cops? Have they flat out said it publicly, or are these sources within the police department?
Well, the Oregonian was the first to print the story, and then Fox 12 News independently confirmed it.
So they actually said that she was it. Let me make sure I have this correct.
This landscaper who worked for them.
A landscaper.
Yeah, he was a gardener, a fancy gardener. He says that she approached him and offered him a large amount of money to kill her husband.
I mean, of all of the gin joints in all the world, why would you pick a landscaper? Look, I'm not saying they don't have skills of some kind. I'm not saying that landscapers that they too do not have their story in life's rich pageant. But I mean, it's Portland. How hard could it be to find a guy who needs $12? And who isn't a landscaper?
Don't you ever read any, like, the old, James Cain pulp novels or anything like that? That's what happens. You're a woman. You're laying around the house. Here comes the hunky gardener. You guys sort of give each other the eye. Next thing you know, you're trying to get him to kill your husband.
Yeah, I know. But having read those books, I know that it always ends with a guy doing a long stretch in a crossbar hotel and asking a screw just to give him one visit with his dame while he's getting, up in the clink. So that's a thing that I wouldn't do. I'm telling you right now, if I had to get somebody taken care of, not that I ever have those thoughts or ever ponder things like that, I got probably 6, 7, 8, 9 guys on my block that would do a better job than the average landscaper.
Apparently, there were also 2 911 calls placed from the family home the day that Kane Harmon moved out. One was classified as a custodial interference issue, and the other call was related to, quote, threats being made to another person.
Okay, that's fantastic. So you got to wonder if there's I'm not trying to imply anything. I am trying to imply something. I'm almost flat out saying it. I just wonder if there's a certain kind of maniacal, perverse glee that comes with being a cop. When you get to tell a guy, hey, by the way, and that wife that we're looking at for that other thing? Yeah, she was going to have you whacked by the landscaper.
And apparently that's exactly how it happened, too. He learned about it from investigators.
Wow.
Who told him. She said that she was in a bad marriage and claimed that Kane had hurt her.
You know, there's really no Hallmark card for this, and there's no preset on one of those, like, online do-it-yourself divorce things, either. You know, there's, like, the wife humping somebody else, just don't love each other anymore. tried to have me killed by the gardener. Does it say that she was having an untoward affair with the gardener, or am I just making that up in my head?
No, we're just making that up in our heads. But honestly, it's sort of, I mean, she could just be nuts and she just went, hey, you, mowing the lawn. You want to make some more money?
Sort of a Stanley Spadowski kind of a thing. Hey, George, you want to kill a guy for $12? All right. Let me just do some edging first. All right. And hello to you. You are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. By the way, have no doubts inside your head that this is a live broadcast. We are here on Monday, July 5th. We got a little bit of a late start today. That is, as Robert Plant would say, nobody's fault but mine. I couldn't get the plug to go into the thing. And, you know, that's always what screws you in the end, is the plug going into the thing, or not, as the case may be. If you want to listen to this program on a mobile device, you can do so. It is mobile.pdx.fm, mobile.pdx.fm. And this show will be archived in its entirety later on today at pdx.fm and legionofnews.com. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, at the Legion of News news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A man who police said wore John Lennon-style glasses robbed a Westland bank Friday morning. Officers said the man showed a pistol as he entered the Bank of the West on Willamette Drive at 10:15 a.m. He robbed the bank of an undisclosed amount of cash and managed to escape, according to Westland police. There were no customers inside the bank at the time, and no one was hurt. Officers arrived at the scene and used canine dogs to track the robber to the 3300 block of Walling Way.
They used canine dogs, really?
They used canine dogs.
As opposed to Homo sapiens sapiens dogs?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Okay.
Or human police officer people.
Seriously. As opposed to Rob Schneider in the wackiest role of his career.
Westland police described the man as white, 6 feet tall, thin, and 35 to 45 years old. He wore a shoulder-length brown wig, a fake mustache, John Lennon-style glasses, and a light-colored shirt.
How would you know demonstrably that it was a fake mustache? I mean, unless you saw him applying said facial hair.
That could just be a really bad, skeezy mustache.
I mean, really. I mean, it's just one of those things. It seems like that's a little bit of making up for the fact that his description of the guy could not possibly be more vague. Well, he's sort of a thin white guy in his 30s. Yeah, good luck tracking him down. I'm sure we'll find him any second. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A driver fleeing officers in a stolen car died in a fiery crash Sunday night, police said. It started around 9 p.m. when a Columbia County Sheriff's deputy tried to pull over the car, but the driver took off and an 18-mile pursuit ensued. The chase ended with the suspect crashing during an apparent attempt to avoid a spike strip on the roadway. The deputy and an officer from the Vernonia Police Department pulled a passenger from the wrecked car, said Sheriff Jeff Dickerson, but they could not rescue the driver before the vehicle became engulfed in flames. The chase lasted about 15 minutes and got up to speeds as high as 80 miles per hour. During the pursuit, Dickerson said, the suspect was observed throwing debris out the driver's side window in an apparent attempt to create obstacles for the pursuing deputy. Items thrown from the vehicle included the club, anti-theft device, large fencing staples, a gas can, and a pair of pants.
I was going to ask exactly how much debris one car could hold. I mean, really, what is there? It seems like your car holds a finite amount of things, Jack, so I mean, you got to give it up for a guy who's actually just driving around with a gas can and the club and the, what is it, large fencing staples?
Large fencing staples and extra pants.
Fencing apparently. Staples like a rapier?
Yes. And, you know, that mask that they wear?
I was going to go with the mask, but I don't know what it's called. You can see now how my humor was thwarted there by my lack of the appropriate fencing lexicon. So I had to go with
an épée.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
The mask is called
the fencing.
I thought it was a rapier.
Sword is called. I believe that's the kind that has a sharp point.
The blunted kind.
The blunted kind is an épée.
How do you spell that?
E-P-E-E.
E-P-E-E. Épée. All right, I'm going to start that. I'm going to work that. See, the next time this story comes around, and it will at some point in the future, there are only so many words in the English language. When this particular combination of words comes back to me in like 3, 4, 5 years, I'm going to be prepared. And I'm going to know what the mask is called, too.
The vehicle, a 1989 Nissan 240SX, was reported stolen on June 26th. The injured passenger was flown in a Life Flight helicopter to Legacy Emanuel Hospital with life-threatening injuries. The driver was declared dead at the scene.
But seriously, what kind of life did that guy have? John, let's get all liquored up and go steal a Nissan. That really is you. That's your key to fun and success on a Portland weekend. All right. That story just sort of worked itself out, though. Sort of the story began, the story continued, and then with the closing of the circle and the burning of the suspect, the story ended. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
The Japanese eating champion, who sat out this year's Coney Island 4th of July hot dog contest, was jailed overnight for disrupting the event.
You have brought shame on whole family!
Competitive eater Joey Jaws Chestnut, I didn't realize that his nickname was Jaws.
It is.
Ate his way to a fourth consecutive championship Sunday, but he was upstaged by the surprise appearance of his biggest rival, six-time champion Takeru Kobayashi, who did not compete but crashed the stage after Chestnut's win and wrestled with police. I believe we have some audio on this.
Yeah, we do. This is this is a little piece of Kobayashi being interviewed. I think as they are, they're either booking him or he's been released. There's something.
He has
been released already?
He was released this morning. So depending on when you got the.
I think this is Kobayashi and one of his people as he leaves the as he leaves the jailhouse right here on the.
Yes, he said when I went there as a spectator just to cheer on my ex buddies who I've been eating with, and actually when I was there, everyone started chanting for me, "Let him eat, let him eat." And he said, and in the heat of it, I jumped on the stage hoping that maybe because of the cheers, the Nathans would actually let him eat and prove that he was the champ. But then he got arrested.
My understanding from talking to Kobe.
So that seems like a completely plausible story there, that the crowd, in fact, wanted him to eat. The crowd wanted it. Well, although as I say those words out loud, maybe it's not so crazy, because when she first started speaking or giving, you know, interpreting what he was saying, it sounded like the sort of thing that you would say if you had crashed the joint and then they were going to throw you in the who's gather. You go, no, they wanted me there. Your Honor, she was asking for it.
Or alternative, we could say that since this event is put on by the organization Major League Eating, and every single one of the people involved in the eating competition are under contract to Major League Eating, including Kobayashi, it doesn't smell like a stunt at all.
What are you trying to say, Don Taylor?
Why are you such a cynic? I'm saying it seems a little fishy.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying that it's a setup. I mean, I don't really know. These are things that Rick Emerson isn't privy to. I will say this, that if there was not already a movie in the works about these two guys, there is right now. It'll be like that, what is that movie, that 67 movie that Billy Crystal did that was about Maris and Mantle? Because that's, I mean, even I know that's what these guys are. I mean, these guys really are, they are the Mickey and what's the other guy? Roger, of the eating world. So this is guaranteed that somebody, probably somebody funded by VH1, is making a movie about this whole thing, like, right now.
The most fascinating character in all of this to me is the guy who actually began and owns Major League Eating. The Nathan's competition has been going on since 1916, something like that. But it's only been the past between 5 and 10 years that it's become just this huge, huge thing that it has. And it's because of this guy who promotes Major League Eating, who started it as a league and makes them all be under contract and actually, like, owns and promotes almost every single eating competition, professional eating competition in the country.
That's fantastic. I mean, I was making this point last, I guess it was maybe Friday when Carl Click was here. It really is all that is great and terrible about America. You know? What do? I pay guys to get on stage and shove food into their mouths while people are starving in the rest of the world. And Major League Eating also sounds like it'd be one of those restaurants that, like, your fat cousin from from Texas would make you go to. You know what I mean? There's like some cousin of yours named like Hank who's visiting from Houston. He'd go, "Hey, you guys ever been to that place, Major League Eating? No, the waitresses are on skates, and you order from a phone in your booth. You don't even have to get up." And then you go there, and they bring you like a tankard of soda.
Yeah, the food would all be like at Claim Jumper, where they just give you
exactly
these obscene portions of food and like slices of cake the size of a Rottweiler,
a foot high.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Kobayashi was wearing a black T-shirt that said "Free Kobe." He mingled with the crowd watching the contest, standing inside the police barricaded pen just under the stage. When the eating ended, he slipped up the stage stairs. Then several security officers appeared and tried to usher him off. He grabbed the metal police barricade with both hands, holding on tightly as the officers pulled at him. Finally, they dragged him down the stairs, with Kobayashi resisting vehemently.
That's fantastic. The only thing that would have been better, he's wearing a shirt that has his own name on it, which I would have thought was a thing that only like David Lee Roth could get away with, but apparently not. The only way this could have been better is if at some point he had actually begun chanting his own name. if he had just started, "Kobe, Kobe," and just gotten the crowd going. So good for him. Well done.
Well, Joey Chestnut won, eating 54 hot dogs in 10 minutes, winning the International Hot Dog Eating Contest, which was televised live on ESPN. The runner-up was Tim Eater X Janus.
Now, see, I had
with a total of 45 hot dogs.
There were many people. I was on the Facebook this weekend, and there were a whole lot of people. Our friend Jenny was. She posted a whole thing where she was rooting for Janus. What is it called? Something Eater X. Yeah, which is. I don't know. That's like a Racer X reference.
It's got to
be it.
Yeah.
Which is just fantastic. So I love the idea that not only do we have competitive eating in this country, not only is it a thing that has been going on, as you said, since the better part of, you know, for the better part of the 20th century and into the future, but now people in America can grow up and actually, from the day they are born till the day they die, follow, track, and root for a guy who eats on camera in front of other people.
Kids in the Midwest with posters on their walls of their favorite chili fry competitors.
This is going to be like how in Sweden you can be, like, you know, kids who play Counter-Strike really well are on the cover of, like, Time magazine. So, awesome.
Yeah. In third place in the competition was Patrick Deep Dish Bertoletti. There we go. Patrick Deep Dish Bertoletti. And he ate 37 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Chestnut was actually disappointed in his performance. He was aiming for a record 70 dogs in 10 minutes, which would beat his own record of 68 from last year. He said, told Associated Press he was dehydrated going in, explained he did not drink enough liquids the day before because he was striving for an emptier stomach.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll have more sound from Joey Chestnut coming up next hour during the Rick Emerson radio program. It is Monday, July 5th, 2010. We are here. We are live broadcasting, as is our wont. You can listen at mobile.pdx.fm. Coming up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson program will have, again, more sound from Joey Chestnut. We will have our friend Siegfried will be joining us today to talk about Trailer Mania 2, Grindhouse Trailer Mania 2, which is coming up. David Walker of badassmofo.com. It will join us, and we have innumerable watches and amusements of all varieties. And we'll talk about some. I'm not going to say they were accidents. I'm going to say some the unintended consequences of not properly inspecting your fireworks before you set them off last night in the street outside the Emerson News Network building. Theoretically, this is Don Taylor, the Legion of News News Desk.
For those of you who drive or try to get around in any way in the city of Portland, Oregon. Keep in mind that the Broadway Bridge closes today for 2 months so that construction of a streetcar can be underway.
For two months. I don't even know. Here's the thing. I've lived in the Northwest for most of my life. I spent most of my childhood coming to Portland or Silverton, or as my grandparents got older and older, they moved to smaller and smaller towns. So I've lived here for over a decade. I still can never tell which damn bridge is which. Which one is the Broadway Bridge?
It's the one that empties out onto Broadway.
You were proud of yourself just there, weren't you?
If you go down Broadway on the east side, if you go down Broadway, you're by the Coliseum. That's the Broadway Bridge.
The one that is by the Rose Garden.
Yeah.
When you drive by the big Amazon thing or whatever the ad is that's on the side of that huge thing that looks like, what is that building?
Yeah, but I don't know. But you go straight down Broadway and you go by the Rose Garden and there's car dealerships and
so it's going to be closed for 2 months because they're putting in a streetcar.
They're putting in a streetcar
that goes from where? Is that just a streetcar that serves the Rose Garden solely?
I don't. You can go online and find all this. The Portland streetcar is going to be going all over the place. This is one of those long-term things that they're doing. I don't know if they're going to connect to the one in Northwest 23rd or how it's working. I haven't kept up on all the streetcar news, frankly.
And when you say the streetcar, this is, and I don't mean to sound daft, because I know there's one downtown, and like I could go look at it myself and then check this out. But when you say streetcar, that is different than the actual MAX. This is like the actual...
The MAX is a big light rail train.
This is like the small green thing that's downtown by PSU.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Traffic will be detoured to the Steele, Burnside, and Fremont bridges. West side access to Union Station should not be affected. Pedestrian and bicyclists will be able to use the bridge through about mid-July when it will be closed to all traffic.
You know what sucks, I mean, apart from the obvious, is that is right near all of that construction happening on MLK, which apparently is just never going to end. I mean, that's just going to be there forever and ever and ever. If their goal is to make sure that we stay off the road so that we don't interfere with the guys who are trying to get the traffic taken care of, then their mission has been accomplished because afternoon and before midnight, like there's a 12-hour stretch Well, I don't go anywhere near that part of town.
And apparently this is part of the same construction. This is for the streetcar that's going to run down MLK and Grand, and I guess it's going to also go across the Broadway bridge.
All right. Well, it doesn't matter to me. I drive everywhere.
I've lived in this town for 20 years, and I still can't get over the fact that, you know, we celebrate the fact that we have sunny weather by making it incredibly inconvenient to get anywhere in this town.
Yeah.
We suddenly tear up all of the streets. We do construction on everything. We close bridges. We have half the town shut down every single weekend for some marathon, for some disease or another, or some half-assed parade. Or, you know, it's summer here. It is supposed to be like delightful, and they just turn it into hell if you live here.
There really ought to be something just called the half-ass parade, or the "we're not going to cure anything" foot race.
Well, have you seen the Starlight Parade? I think you could rename that the half-ass parade.
Was the Starlight Parade the one that happened? That's the one that happens the week before the actual Rose Parade.
Yeah, it happens at night, and people plug light bulbs into their bicycles.
And this makes me sound like a bad Portlander, I know. But it's not so much that I'm a bad Portlander, it's that I detest parades. I detest parades with everything in me. And every town in the world has some parade that they believe to be the most splendiferous event in the history. And here's the thing. Here's a little FYI for me. To everybody who takes part in the Portland Parade, everybody who takes part in the Pioneer Day Parade in goddamn Utah, everybody who takes part in Bloomsday, which is the thing that clogs up the streets like so much human cholesterol in Spokane, lining up to watch a parade is lining up to watch traffic. That's all it is. You are actually getting a lawn chair and hauling your fat American ass down to the street to watch traffic go by for like 7 hours really slowly. You might as well just go watch tractors roll off an assembly line somewhere.
Well, I can totally understand why parades were popular in olden times when not a lot happened. And so you'd have, like, you know, the marching band from your high school, and, like, people would make floats. And, hey, there's the mayor, and he's waving at us. I could see this. But we have, you know, television and video games and movies and things now.
Let's go downtown. There's going to be an automobile there. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
I did want to add, from the text box here, someone writes, "The streetcar is why MLK and Grand Avenue has been messed up forever, so the homeless people won't have to walk between Southeast and downtown."
Well, here's the thing. In Portland, you can never really tell if that's sarcasm or if that's a legitimate reason.
I thought you were going to say, here, you can't really tell if people are homeless half the time.
That is also true.
Just be crazy. Or slackers.
Well, it's like in Spokane, you play the daughter or girlfriend game. And, you know, here you play the homeless or musician game.
When I lived in Southern California, I lived in Hollywood. There was a stretch of Santa Monica Boulevard that was where the boy prostitutes would hang out. And they would all stand near bus benches at bus stops. And so my first husband and I used to play a game that we called Working or Waiting.
Yes.
Where we would go working, waiting, waiting, waiting. Oh, working way too hard. Waiting.
Dawn Taylor is broadcasting from the Legion of News news desk, by the way. The Rick Emerson radio program will be coming up at 1 o'clock with more sound from the hot dog eating contest, the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest, the Kobayashi Scandal. We'll have a top five coming up today. And some full-on screaming crazy sound from Nancy Grace. We'll get to that later on, as well as your phone calls, etc. This is Dawn Taylor.
A boater discovered a body in the Columbia River near Rooster Rock State Park, about 21 miles east of Portland. The body is not that of missing Portland boy Kyron Horman. A spokesperson for the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department tells us Multnomah County River Patrol arrived at the river Saturday to recover the body. However, the patrol has determined the body must first be turned over to Skamania County Sheriff's Office. On June 25th, it was reported that a Stevenson man presumed drowned after his small raft capsized near the Stevenson boat launch on the Columbia River was identified as 26-year-old Jordan Jaco, described as loved by everyone, but had yet to be found. The Skamania County Sheriff's Office was handling that search. In response to comments to KATU News, Undersheriff Dave Cox said that absolutely a body could make its way from Stevenson over the dam to the Rooster Rocks area.
You know, if it was really motivated and if it put in the time.
He said, "They've been spilling water over the spillway at the dam, and a body could just go right over the spillway."
Okay.
So it's not known yet if the body found Saturday is Jayco's, but the sheriff's office will, you know, be updating as they know.
This is like one of the, well, there's two things. One, we've entered that period of time now where every time there is a body or a corpse of any kind, they immediately they have to put out like a press release in 70-point type that says, not the kid, because that's exactly what everybody thinks. Also, this just reminds me of that whole thing about Tabor where occasionally homeless guys will tumble into the reservoir and then just sort of half-life away into my drinking water. So, bodies going overseas. It seems like we ought to have a screen or something that we've developed by this point that would keep bodies from doing that. You know, that would hold them in one place for a while.
Think.
All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
It is now time for science news.
Ladies and gentlemen, Science on the March comes your way via Legion of News right here on PDX.FM.
A space telescope that reveals how the universe came to life after the Big Bang returned its first image this morning. The Planck telescope, which took 16 years to build and cost 700 million euros, was launched almost a million miles into space last May. The European Space Agency hoped it would provide astronomers with new data on the Big Bang enigma. Its first full image showed the Milky Way across the center of the sky and cosmic microwave background, CMB, a faint relic radiation created just after the Big Bang, about 13.7 billion years ago.
Here's the thing about the Big Bang. When they talk about how the entire universe was once the size of a grain of sand, and then in the blink of an eye, cosmically speaking, it just expanded and is continuing to expand now. I'm not saying they're making that up, but I'm saying that is sort of the secular version of faith, because I just have to assume that they're telling me the truth. I mean, I have no way of verifying that. I mean, I guess I could.
Well, it's the same way with black holes. You know, scientists say that black holes exist because theoretically they have proven that black holes exist. We've never found one. We've never seen one.
Right.
But the math says that they exist, so therefore they do.
Well, that's like when I saw Stephen Hawking. I was going to say I saw Stephen Hawking speak, which I suppose is, I mean, I saw him sit on a stage while noise came from an area near him, and he was talking about time travel. And somebody said, "Mr. Hawking, what about that there traveling to time? Can you do that?" And he scrabbled out an answer, and he said, "The answer is almost certainly yes. Time travel is." And I remember thinking, and I was going, "He has no idea." And even if he did, if he is telling us the truth, we have no way to actually prove that. And I wonder if maybe scientists every now and again just screw with this just to see what the fools will believe. You know, feed some line of gibberish to the public and see if we buy it. And again, I'm not saying he's making it up. I'm just saying my brain is so tiny that I have no choice but to just pin my hopes on the fact that scientists aren't misleading me.
Well, according to David Parker, director of space science and exploration at the UK Space Agency, which partly funds the telescope, Planck has painted us its first spectacular picture of the universe. This single image captures both our own cosmic backyard, the Milky Way galaxy that we live in, but also the subtle imprint of the Big Bang from which the whole universe emerged. I will admit that this is the sort of area where science kind of loses me.
Where it leaves your fingernail grasp?
Yeah, that it's a space telescope that apparently took a picture of something that happened 13 billion years ago.
Yeah, and by the way, calling it
I have to admit, my brain is too small. I do not understand this.
And leading with calling it a space telescope doesn't necessarily... space telescope is the one phrase there that I understand, but it's also the one that sounds like it doesn't jibe with the rest of the piece, because it seems like something that came out of a William Castle film. All right, well, the thing I don't understand, and I'm not trying to be that guy, I don't understand exactly how it is that a space telescope, even one that costs 700 million euros or whatever the hell, it can go and take pictures of the Milky Way that they can then send back. And it's like my cable goes out every day. I can't seem to...
Yeah, I can't get a consistent Wi-Fi signal.
I can't make a cell phone call from inside the place where my wife works, you know? And that's just because it's on a hill. So... I guess there's somebody somewhere that could explain that. Maybe we need to take all the space telescope guys and just redirect their efforts for like a month. Just say, like, could we rent your genius for just like a good 2, 3, 4 weeks? You know, because I had this lawnmower that never seems to run without taking 500 or 600 pull starts. All right.
Also in space and science news, an unmanned Russian space capsule carrying supplies to the International Space Station failed in its docking attempt this weekend. Russian Mission Control and NASA said Friday. The Progress space capsule is carrying more than 2 tons of food, water, and other supplies for the orbiting laboratory. 3 Russian and 3 U.S. astronauts comprise the current crew. None of the supplies were deemed necessary for the station's immediate survival. And the outpost is well supplied, but
that's one of those things they're saying because they know the guys in the space station have access to Google, and so they want you to. Because what are you going to tell the guy? No, I'm sorry, it's all of your food and water. There's no way to get it to you.
Apparently, the loss of the automated docking system on the station told the Progress essentially to continue on its path and fly past its intended docking target.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
There's a backup system that's more active than the passive one that failed. That would allow the crew on board the station to guide the unmanned ship themselves. And I believe we also have some audio related to this.
Yes, but let me back up for a second. So the automated system was the backup to the manual system?
No, the manual system is the backup to the automatic one. They were just sitting there going, it'll just do it. We just push the button and it does it. And then it didn't. And so now they have to do it themselves.
So now so it's not the manual thing that failed. So they have something else they can try.
Yes.
All right. Because otherwise, it's just a whole lot of just sitting there waiting to crash into the sun or whatever.
Why do you even have these guys, though, on board who can do this if you're not going to use them to steer?
I don't know the answer. Because for science stuff. For science. All right. Here's we have sound from the space station story. This is, I believe, them discussing. This is their description of the problem.
And apparently it did actually finally dock today. My story is a day late, so.
All right. We're going to fail. Well, let's play the sound anyway. I bothered to edit it down, so we're going to play it. Waste not, want not, I always say. All right. Here's the space station.
Well, this morning, as we were making a planned docking of the Progress vehicle, and that's one of our resupply ships to the International Space Station, as we were making that attempt to dock, about 20 minutes before our planned docking, the Progress lost its telemetry lock. That's how it locks onto the International Space Station during docking.
Yes.
So when they lost that telemetry lock, we were not able to dock, of course. And at that point, the resupply ship flew past the space station. Now, it flew past at, a distance of about 2 miles, 3 kilometers is what we were saying, but that's about 2 miles.
Well, that's got to feel great.
That's very close in space, though.
It's got to be an interesting feeling to be, look, I know we're all hungry, but there's the ship. No, it's, hold on.
Did they see it out the window?
Maybe
no,
it's,
oh.
No, it's not, doesn't hear it. Maybe they're turning around. No, it doesn't seem to be slowing at all. No, it's, hello? Well, we have to eat Jeff. Jeff, take off your pants. That's my artist rendering over the conversation that might have been had. That's like when you read a Ben Mezrich book and he's just clearly made up everything. Theoretically. Here's Dawn Taylor.
That is all of our science news.
Science on the march. Here is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A trailer ran over the leg of an 11-year-old boy Sunday at a 4th of July parade in Malala. The boy was helping pass out candy as part of the parade. A fire department representative said the trailer had just come to a stop before the accident. The boy walked to the back of the trailer to get more candy, but the trailer started to move again and ran over his leg.
When you say a trailer, this is like a,
I think like a float, a parade float trailer thing. Like, you know how you build the, I'm assuming. It
what did
just
you
says
just
a
do
trailer.
There? You were just waggling your hand as though you were bouncing a basketball really, really quickly on the ground.
This is the international sign for a parade float built on a trailer.
Is that hand gesture you're doing there, is that code for like, what do you call it, that thing?
Yeah. The thing on the right. Thing with the stuff
so
in the
if,
place.
If I were to ask you to describe some sort of, if I were to ask you to describe some souffle that you couldn't quite come up with a name for, you might be doing that same hand gesture.
Or this. Sometimes I do this with two hands.
See, that looks like you're giving a head rub to a bald man. Like you're giving him a sort of scalp massage. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
There's a lot of people around, said Tina Birch, who witnessed the accident. They're throwing candy. Kids run up, and you probably can't see everything at once. Several people, including a nurse, pulled the boy to safety and started to treat his wounds. It's awful when something like that happens, said witness Tyler LeFay.
It was a parade of tears.
Everybody is out to have a good time. You hate to see anybody get hurt. The Malala Pioneer newspaper identified the boy as Nick Bogart. A Life Flight helicopter took Bogart to Legacy Emanuel Hospital. He was listed in fair condition Sunday evening.
This is like that parade that happened. Is that the children's parade that happens on Sandy in the Hollywood District, where that guy, and I'm just going to pass this along without editorial comment or observation, where that guy apparently just had enough of a bunch of yowling children blocking his way and just drove his car through the whole thing.
And who hasn't wanted to do that, really? But it would be wrong.
Thank you. I was waiting for that. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A Yakima woman was arrested for firing shots at a sheriff's deputy from the back of a patrol car in eastern Oregon, leading to an armed standoff that closed Highway 97 for hours. Oregon State Police said Sherman County Sheriff's Deputy Brian Hulkey stopped a blue Chevy sedan driven by 54-year-old Leonardo Rodriguez on U.S. 97 just before 8 p.m. for a traffic citation. The deputy said he suspected passenger Candace Same, 24, had been involved in some criminal activity, according to Oregon State Police. He handcuffed her and put her in the back of his patrol car and called for backup, which is when Same pulled out a .40-caliber handgun and popped off several shots.
Wait a minute. So she was in the back? She was in the back of the squad car, the patrol car?
Yes. Handcuffed.
Handcuffed.
But apparently he didn't bother to check to make sure she was without a weapon.
Where was she storing the weapon? Is there a photo?
It must have been in the back of her pants or something.
Yeah, I was going to ask about it. I'm wondering where the gun was that he wouldn't have noticed it. I mean, unless she was wearing really, really baggy clothing or she had substantial folds in which you could hide a gun, which is not like out of the question.
No, she looks like a thin, petite little person, so I don't know.
All right.
Other passenger, 21-year-old Nathan Smith, ran to try and get Same out of the car. Neither Deputy Hulkey nor his drug detention canine, Luke, were hit, and Hulkey was able to take cover until more officers arrived. Officers shut down Highway 97, and a SWAT team was called in around 2:15 a.m. Same surrendered. She was charged with criminal mischief, unlawful use of a weapon, attempted escape, recklessly endangering, menacing with a firearm, and theft.
Well, all right then.
And there, of course, is a picture of them, and they are fine, upstanding-looking people.
Now, is this are they a couple? Does it say here if they are together? I mean, I'm suspecting they are because, I mean, you know, that's typically how these stories unfold. The best part is how there's actually photos of the bullet holes here. Yeah, she looks like bad news. And he's doing that thing. He's doing that thing in his mugshot where it's like he is leaning his head as far back as possible. I think in some sort of some sort of a machismo-based...
Yeah, an attempt to look tough.
Yeah, that didn't really work. Here's the thing. You don't really look tough when you're being made to wear a bright orange jumpsuit. There's just nothing. There's no counteracting that. All right.
I realize the bright orange jumpsuit is mainly so that they can spot them if they run away. But it also, you know, serves to just humiliate as well, I think.
Well, yeah, what's that guy? Sheriff Joe Arpaio? Is that the guy in Arizona? The guy that has, you know, he's always in the news for, you know, just saying something outrageous. But he's the sort of Buford Pusser guy that he's the one that started making all of their jumpsuits bright pink. And so it's like if you're working at, and he had that whole thing about, I feed my prisoners for $1 a day. And then they'll cut to these guys who are working on a road crew, you know, where it's like 1,000 degrees outside. And there's a guy going by with this sort of Cool Hand Luke bucket to slop them with water or something. And they're in these bright pink jumpsuits. And I know that I'm supposed to, the ACLU would want me to say, oh, this is a tremendous violation of, you know, but it's fantastic. It really is just the best thing you've ever seen. Unless you get locked up there, as my friend Chris Sneathan did at one point, there was a case of mistaken identity where he looked exactly like a guy they were trying to find. And they picked him up and he had read about this notorious jail where this hard ass just kept these guys locked up and fed them for $1 and put them in pink and made them, you know, break up rocks by the side of the road. And he said it was just the most surreal thing to one day then find himself in that jail going, well, I'll be damned. And it's like, there he was. And he kept, and then he found himself opening his mouth and saying all those things that, you know, everybody says that are never true. Like, no, you got the wrong guy. So, all right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
I believe now is a good time for entertainment news.
It's always a good time for entertainment news, Dr. Taylor. Here is your entertainment news for Monday, July 5th, a day on which we are doing a live broadcast for you while everyone else is peddling the same old tedium in the form of reruns and best-ofs. We provide brand new amusements for you, such as this.
The Associated Press reports that Paris Hilton was detained in South Africa after being found in possession of marijuana. The socialite, who was in Port Elizabeth for the World Cup, was reportedly arrested outside the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium after Brazil played the Netherlands. She was found in possession of some amount of marijuana, an officer told the Associated Press. We don't know how much. It's a high-profile person. Only the top cops are dealing with it. Hilton's publicist later released the following statement. Paris Hilton was questioned today by police in South Africa on allegations of smoking marijuana. However, I can confirm that the incident was a complete misunderstanding, and it was actually another person in the group who did it.
You got the wrong guy.
The case has been dropped against Paris, and no charges will be made. The authorities have apologized for wrongfully accusing her, since she had nothing to do with the incident.
In no way.
Paris is having an incredible time at the World Cup.
Of course she is. All right, the only photograph I saw, I saw some picture, there was like a blur of her getting into or out of a car. But whenever a story like this happens, and it's not nearly often enough, by the way, where there's some celebrity who's detained in some other country, don't you just pray with everything in you that there's some Midnight Express thing?
Oh,
that
yeah.
Just
especially Paris Hilton.
I mean, and I'm just speaking now as a pundit, as a bloviator. These are not, I'm not saying anything bad should happen to her. All I'm saying is, if somehow she were to be detained for having drugs in a country where apparently that sort of thing is even less tolerated than it is here, if she were to end up being, you know, hung up and having the soles of her feet beaten with a hose, I don't know that I would be all that inclined to go help her or suggest that anybody do so. I mean, that's just my observation.
Jam made from what its maker claims is one of Princess Diana's hairs is up for sale at an art exhibition in London.
I had no idea you were going to say that. If you had asked me to list the 1,000 things most likely to come out of your mouth, jam made out of Princess Di's hair would not have been on the list.
The preserve, called Occult Jam, is part of a surrealist art show at London's Barbican Art Gallery that includes exhibits by Salvador Dali and René Magritte. The £5 a jar, $7.60, jam is both art and food, says Sam Bompas, who founded catering company Bompas and Parr. He said the preserve is made by infusing a tiny speck of the late Princess of Wales' hair with gin, and is then combined with milk and sugar to create a product with a taste resembling condensed milk. The hair was bought on eBay for $10 from a U.S. dealer who collects what he says is celebrity hair and sells it in extremely tiny parts. The art show's organizers say his company asked his company to come up with a response in food to the exhibition's surrealist theme. Bompas said he decided to make the bizarre product to provoke people into thinking about food marketing and how language enhances the everyday eating experience. We thought about it, and the most mundane food of all is jam, so we made it a surreal object, he said. Self-styled food architects, their past projects have included a banquet consisting entirely of gelatin molds shaped like architectural landmarks. In another, they gave audiences at a screening of Peter Greenaway's film, The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, scratch and sniff cards that evoke smells from key scenes in the movie.
I should say, by the way, that I was opening my mouth to make some sort of snarky criticism about this, but as somebody who went out of his way to buy a comic book many years ago simply because Marvel told me that it was printed in the blood of Kiss, I don't really know that I'm in any position to criticize. So, you know, what are you going to do? Here's Don Taylor.
Singer Melissa Etheridge has filed legal documents to split with Tammy Lynn Michaels, her partner of 9 years, citing irreconcilable differences and asking that the court not award Michaels financial support. Michaels gave birth to the couple's son Miller and daughter Johnny in 2006. The day after Etheridge filed, Michaels took to her blog to express her shock and dismay over Etheridge filing.
No one cares.
In a almost haiku-like post titled Blindsighting, Michaels writes, "Gentle waves, no noise for a while, or maybe gentle voices and smack, file for divorce.
Wait,
even though we both promised, agreed, hand shook, pinky swore, no filing until after the tour. In the fall."
I wish I'd known. I have some Zen flute music. Well, maybe the next time.
Maybe the next hour we can do it with the Zen music.
God almighty.
It seems her qualms about the end of the relationship extend beyond just the timing. Do you actually still have,
No, I'll have to dig it up.
Her broken promises told to me by headlines. I'm raising the kids, doing what I can. Second set of yours, Michaels writes. Could you stop blind sighting me? She said sighting.
What language is she talking in now?
Unless it's another art form you're working on. Have a good concert. A rep for Etheridge could not be reached for comment.
All right. Are there a lot of people going to check out the blog of Melissa Etheridge's girlfriend? Is that?
I guess they are now.
Is that what the kids are surfing? All right. I forget who it was who made this observation. It might have been Dan Savage. But he said the problem... He said in his opinion, this is Dan Savage saying, he said in his opinion, the problem with celebrity gay couples was that they did the thing that every straight couple would know. That, I mean, well, that's not true. I guess I shouldn't say that. But he said they have not yet learned the lesson, you know, because there's, you know, gay marriage is such a relatively new phenomenon. He said they have not learned the lesson that if you get on television and you immediately proclaim to everyone that your union will last forevermore, you will never get divorced, you will be together until the end of... Oh, wait, what's this on her blog? And then it's like you split up. That is the surest way for any celebrity couple, but it seems like especially gay celebrity couples who have to, and I understand why they do this, but they go on television and they say, look, our marriage is great. We're just as good as any, you know, as any straight couple. It's just as valid, which is totally true. But that also means that it's just as likely to split up, which is like, you know, like 65% or something.
Melissa, Ellen DeGeneres learned that the hard way with Nutball Anne Heche.
Oh, God damn.
Oh, we're soulmates. We're going to be in love forever. They did all the talk shows. They did all the things. Then, like, you know, a year later, it's over. So when she started dating Portia de Rossi, it was like, oh, yeah, we're seeing each other.
Yeah. No, that's...
we're not talking about it.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, that is the deal. You can say, you know, we're in love. We're happy to be there. Do not get on television if you are... It doesn't matter. Gay, straight, whatever. And say, no, 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 ours is a love eternal that would last through all problems. We will never be torn asunder because you're going to get home and have your stuff is going to be in like a, you know, in a Ryder truck. That's just sort of the way that happens. All right. In any event. Hey, let me just tell you this just real quickly about Portia de Rossi and Ellen DeGeneres. I don't think I'm the only man that feels this way. I find Ellen DeGeneres really sexy, too. That's the thing about it, is that Portia de Rossi's, you know, she's cute and sort of... Yeah, I don't know, in a sort of showy sort of way. There's something about Ellen DeGeneres, though. I think she's sexy in some sort of fashion that I can't quite quantify.
Well, she's smart and funny and attractive.
And she's
really
rich.
Personable.
That's the other thing.
And she's really rich.
I didn't really put that together. That's also the big thing. To buy and sell me is what she could do. She's hot.
Just one of those odd life experience stories. And I knew Ellen DeGeneres was gay a long time before she ever came out. Because I used to, when I lived in Southern California, I lived in Hollywood proper for a few years. And I saw her at the Home Depot one day with another woman shopping.
Buying a nail gun?
And, well, it was very obvious from the way they were together that they were together. And I'd seen her stand up, and I was a fan. I was like, oh, look, that's Ellen DeGeneres. Oh.
I see. Now I know why there isn't Mr. DeGeneres. It all makes so much sense.
So it's like when it was such a big deal, like, yeah. You know, 5 or 6 years later when she came out, I was like, yeah, so what?
Like
who didn't know that?
Well, I remember seeing Rosie O'Donnell when she did her when she used to be the stand-up host on VH1 years and years ago, and that's back when she had. I mean, I haven't seen her recently. I try to avoid seeing her, like if at all possible, unless I have time to sort of steel myself. But it's when she had like the long sort of cascading curly hair, and she didn't ever dress in what I would call an overtly feminine way. But she wasn't just like hey, look at my sweatpants. It was when she sort of tried to look presentable. And so I get somebody somewhere had said, look, can we just put a little bit of polish on you, just even the tiniest bit? But it didn't help. I mean, that was just there was no covering that up. Yeah. I mean, because when she would speak, there was just like this something. There was just a certain kind of tone that indicated that she did probably spend a lot of time, the going home and like putting up like tornado fencing or something around the house.
You know, she was quite adorable for a good long time, though. I mean, she's, you know, kind of a little rough around the edges, but still quite adorable. I mean, if you. You know, if you see her in the S&M outfit in East of Eden, I mean, she looks good. She did look really good.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I'm not saying she's an unattractive woman, or at least not. I don't think she puts in a lot of effort these days. And look, who am I to judge? I mean, if you're rich and famous, apparently one of the, I think you can just sit around and stink. Doesn't matter to me. But I'm just saying she doesn't. She is sort of like Matthew McConaughey in that way. She's just, look, I'm rich enough, I don't have to bathe. F you. And then he just sits around and just grows a beard and smells. So when she was endeavoring to kind of keep herself sort of scrubbed up, I think she was cute. I would never say she was, and she, Rosie O'Donnell was cute. She might have been pretty. Not really ever hot. Not beautiful. I wouldn't say, not sexy to me, but then again, you know, what do I know? I had some point that I was going to make here. Oh, but the other thing about that movie is I was just constantly distracted by Dana Delaney.
Well,
so
yeah.
How
could you not?
I didn't really notice anybody else was on the screen for most of that.
I'm about 95% straight, and Dana Delaney is the main focus of that movie.
What does that mean you're 95%? Never mind. Don't answer. No, I'm going to write that down. Don't answer yet. The Rick Emerson Show, by the way, is going to be coming up at 1 o'clock. In the Rick Emerson Show today, we'll find out what Dawn Taylor means when she describes herself as being 95% straight. We also have a top five. What is your top five today?
Top five most misinterpreted rock and roll songs.
So top five misinterpreted rock songs coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll also talk to our good friend Siegfried about Grindhouse Trailer Mania 2 coming to the Hollywood Theater. Oh, and to that guy who, confidential to Wandering in Wichita, or whatever your name was, the guy who requested that I begin the show with the Erotic Adventures of Zorro. I'm going to do that tomorrow. I won't do it today because I want to have to, because it's like 9 minutes. The trailer for the Erotic Adventures of Zorro is endless. So I'm going to edit it down. But I do have that. It's on my computer as we speak. Playing that tomorrow. But the Rick Emerson Show comes up next at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Well, if you're wondering what to watch on TV tonight, new tonight, an episode of Cake Boss on TLC. There are actually several episodes of Cake Boss. It looks like they're running kind of a marathon of it. But you want to check the one at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In which a cake is made for a king at medieval times. Later, Buddy is challenged to a joust when he delivers his confection. Also, they make tiramisu.
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not.
Buddy is challenged to a joust.
Yes, when he delivers his cake to medieval times on Cake Boss.
Is this some sort of like a Connecticut, a Connecticut cakier in I don't even know what you call a cake maker. What do you mean in medieval times?
Are you familiar with the Medieval Times restaurant?
No.
Oh, it's this thing they have. I don't know if there's just the one in California, if there's a number of them.
Is it a theme restaurant?
It's a theme restaurant.
It's like in Vegas. It's like a Treasure Island thing.
Yeah.
Where you watch jousting.
And you go, and everybody who works there, like, they're serving wenches bringing you your Pepsi. And you wear, like, little cardboard crowns.
This
and
is
you
a Ren Fair of restaurant.
Yeah, and you sit in different sections, except it's medieval, and the medieval period and the Renaissance period are two different periods.
Whatever.
But, yeah, and you sit in different sections, and they give you little flags, and you're supposed to root for certain jousters.
Good evening, my liege. Would
exactly.
you like a large Mr. Pibb?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all really cheesy and really ridiculous.
All
but,
right.
you know.
Okay.
Also, on the Food Network, The Best Thing I Ever Ate. Memorable appetizers are recalled by Food Network stars, including Ted Allen, Bobby Flay, and Duff Goldman, included French onion soup dumplings and calamari.
We've actually now reached the point where it's guys sitting around on television reminiscing about a dinner they had one time. Okay.
And in other food TV on TLC, Inedible to Incredible. The episode is Bayou Botch Up. A couple think they can cook, but their inedible boiled fish and microwaved eggs prove otherwise.
And what is this program called?
It's called Inedible to Incredible.
I've never heard about that.
I
it's so hard to keep up with food programming now. Because the thing is, and I don't know if this is an Anthony Bourdain thing or where this came from, but ever since they figured out ways to get guys to watch food programming, it multiplies faster than I can keep up with it. Because now there's Anthony Bourdain, There's No Reservations, which is not on the Food Network, but it's essentially a food-based show. There's, was it Bizarre Foods with Dave What's-His-Guts, the guy, the Uncle Fester-looking bastard that...
Zimmern, Andrew Zimmern.
Yeah, and he's, he's from the New York Times or something, and he goes and has horse hoof soup or something.
Yeah.
Then there's Dives, Diners, and Drive-Ins with Guy What's-His-Name.
Oh, I hate that guy.
Guy Fiero, is that his name?
Yeah, he's one of those guys who won the reality show to become a Food Network star.
Are you now? Is that true, or are you just saying
no,
that
it
it's
is.
Like a
Food Network has an actual reality show to become a Food Network star, and they make people do all of these lame things and prove that they can cook on camera and be personalities, and then they give them a gig on the Food Network, and he's one of those guys.
She says with considerable bitterness.
My Lord, he's annoying.
And I have to admit that here's the thing about him. The thing about Guy Fiero is I can tell as opposed to Anthony Bourdain, let's say, or even, what's his name, Dave Zimmer. Guy Fiero is very much, it's much more of a contrivance, his personality. That guy's obviously like 100 years old, but somebody's bleached his hair and made it spiky, and then they've given him sunglasses to wear backward so he can talk to dudes, so he can talk to guys between the ages of like 18 and 40. That being said, I can mentally sort of expunge him from the program and enjoy the show itself. I actually like that show a lot. I can get past him. And I don't find him, I don't find him to be a deal breaker. He's not overtly off-putting the way that some of those hosts are. To me, he's just sort of, Guy Fiero, I can take a leave. All right, let's do one more here, and then we will draw the curtain down on this as we prepare for The Rick Emerson Show, which will begin in just a few minutes over at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Well, that was all of the entertainment news, so we don't need that music anymore.
And to bed. All right.
There you go. State police arrested a 55-year-old hitchhiker accused of robbing two Portland teenagers who stopped to pick him up on Interstate 5 in southwest Oregon. The 17-year-old boy and 15-year-old girl told police the hitchhiker stole a purse and threatened to shoot them after they gave him a lift early Wednesday. Not long after the hitchhiker left the car, Trooper Joe Phelan pulled the teens over for a traffic violation. They told him they had just been robbed. The trooper found Samuel Neal of Myrtle Point hiding in the brush at the Pass Creek Park. He had no gun, but police say he did have the girl's purse. Neal was booked into the county, Douglas County Jail in Roseburg on charges of theft, robbery, and menacing. And I'm going to show you this picture, and you tell me, I mean, this is, if nothing, this is just testament to how stupid kids are when they're 17 years old. Would you have picked this guy up hitchhiking?
Oh, wow.
No. This is a... This is a guy who says something to you like, would you wring out one of your socks into my mouth? That'd be awesome. No, he's all kinds of unnerving. He's like if James Cameron had like a second cousin that was homeless and like a meth addict. That's what that guy looks like. What is his name?
His name is Samuel Neal.
Samuel Neal is in
Myrtle Point.
How do you spell Neal there?
N-E-A-L.
N-E-A-L. So if you get a chance to look up Samuel Neal, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. You can find out more about this program, by the way, at, it's not facebook.com/Legion of News. We don't have the custom thing yet, but you just go to Facebook, you look for Legion of News, or twitter.com/Legion of News. Don't forget this program will be archived later on today at legionofnews.com or right here at PDX.fm, or you can also listen on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. The Rick Emerson radio program begins in just a few minutes over at rickemerson.com. So if you have not yet subscribed, you should do so right now, this very minute. Do whatever you have to do to get the money. Graft, swindle, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because it all looks the same, you know, in our bank account. So
yeah, really, you could just cash in all your beer bottles and get $7.
That's the thing. Or maybe you got a roommate who's a real heavy sleeper. Well, you know, whatever. That begins over at rickemerson.com in just a few minutes. Today we'll be talking about Grindhouse Trailer Mania 2. We'll be counting down the top five most misinterpreted rock songs. And we'll have more sound from the hot dog eating debacle scandal controversy that happened over the weekend. I've got insane Nancy Grace sound to get to. And we'll talk about everything that happened over this past weekend. We are live at rickemerson.com later on today. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.